बिहारी जय राधा माधव पंजा बिहारी गोपी चंद वाला गोपी चंद वाला पिवा बिहारी यशरंदन बज चंद रंजन यशरंदन बज चंद रंजन जमुना तीरा पन चारी जमुना तीरा पन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvachakacharya Chitarasattu Shishan Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki.
Jai
Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvachakacharya Chitarasattu Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Ki. Namacharya Haridas Thakur Ki. Samaveda Bhaktivinda Ki. All glories assemble devotees. All glories assemble devotees. All glories assemble devotees. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Okay, so today we're reading from third canto, chapter 20, verse 41. So, start here. Okay. Jagushtar vishijantam. Jim Vajajam Tanum Prabhu Nidram Indriya Vikleto Yayabhute Shudrishate Yeno Chishtan Darshayanti Tan Umadan Pachakshate Jagusta Vishitan Tam. Jim Bananyam Tanum Prabho. Nidram Indriya Vikledo. Yaya Bhute Shudishate. Neno Chishta Darshayanti. Tamu Madan Prachakshate. Okay. Jimbarakyam Nimpabo. Jam India Vikledo. Yaya Bhute Shudrishate. Yeno Chistanda Shayanti. Tanman Madan Prachakshate. Jagrustad Vishitan Tam. Jimbagakyam Tanum Prabhu. Nidram Nindriya Vikledo. Yaya Bhute Shudrishate. Yena Chistanda Shayanti. Tanmunadam Prachakshate. Okay, any of the women want to chant? Jagrustad Vishitam Tam. Jimranam Tanum Prabhu. Nidram India Vikledo. Yaya Bhute Shudrishate. Yeno Chistanda Shayanti. Tanun Madan Prachakshate. Jagrustad Vishishtantam. Jimbanakyam Tanum Prabhu. Nidram India Vikledo. Yaya Bhute Shudrishate. Inochistanda Shayanti. Tanun Madan Pravakshate. Jagrustad Vishitantam. Jimbanakyam Tanum Prabhu. Nidram India Vikledo. Yaya Bhute Shudrishate. Yeno Chistanda Shayanti. Tanun Madan Prachakshate. Jagrustad Vishishtantam. Jimbanakyam Tanum Prabhu. Nidram India Vikledo. Yaya Bhute Shudrishate. Yeno Chistanda Shayanti. Tanun Madan Prachakshate. Okay, anyone else? All right. So word for word. Chagru took possession. Tad Vishrishtam, thrown off by him. Tam, that. Jimbanakyam, known as yawning.
Tanum, the body. Prabho, of Lord Brahma. Nidram, sleep. Indriya, Vikleta. Oh, Vikleta, yeah, drooling. Yaya, by which? Bhuteshu, among the living beings. Drishyate, is observed. Yena, by which? Uchishtan, smeared with stool and urine. Darshayanti, bewilder. Tam, that. Unmadam, madness. Prakakshate, in spoken of. Okay, translation by Srila Prabhupada. The ghosts and hobgoblins took possession of the body, which was thrown off in the form of yawning by Brahma, the creator of the living entities. This is also known as the sleep which causes drooling. The hobgoblins and ghosts attack men who are impure, and their attack is spoken of as insanity. Please repeat. The ghosts and hobgoblins took possession of the body, which was thrown off in the form of yawning by Brahma, the creator of the living entities. This is also known as the sleep which causes drooling. The hobgoblins and ghosts attack men who are impure, and their attack is spoken of as insanity. Purport by Srila Prabhupada, the disease of insanity or being haunted by ghosts takes place in an unclean state of existence. Here it is clearly stated that when man is fast asleep and saliva flows from his mouth and he remains unclean, ghosts then take advantage of his unclean state and haunt the body. In other words, those who drool while sleeping are considered unclean and are subject to be haunted by ghosts or to go insane. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So there's 8,400,000 species of life. And what they're talking about here, the ghosts and hobgoblins, that's one of the species of life. Does anybody know how many species of human beings there are, according to the Bhagavad Gita? Do you know? You're getting there. Anybody else? Yeah. 400,000. There's 400,000 species just of human beings. So, you know, the modes of all the species of life, they're all associated with different modes of material nature. Who knows, like, one of the modes of material nature is? Yes. The mode of? That's right, good. What's another one? The mode of ignorance. What's another one? The mode of? Goodness, right. So goodness, passion, and ignorance. And Prabhupada says that, you know, most of the people in today's world, they're made up of passion and ignorance. You know, even ourselves, you know, are made up of those modes. And so it's something to think about, like what mode we're in and what we associate with and what we bring when we associate with those modes. So what are some, maybe you can tell me some of the characteristics of the mode of goodness. Can anybody tell me? If someone's in the mode of goodness, what does that look like or feel like? Anybody want it? Yes. What? Okay, you might be helping somebody. That's good. That's important. And so, and when you're helping someone, how might you feel if you're helping somebody? Yes. You would feel good. So the mode of goodness is characterized by feeling happy, you know, feeling joyful, and serving, because you're just like the dharma of water is wet, The Dharma of fire is heat or burning, and the Dharma of a human being is service, serving. That's a natural quality of a human being, is to serve. So in the mode of goodness, those are some of the characteristics. They're charitable, they're kind, and they're speech. These modes of material nature, they apply to so many things. They apply to work, they apply to your speech, they apply to the austerities you perform, they apply to your food. Like, what might be a food that's in the mode of ignorance? What? Yes. Eggs, okay, definitely mode of ignorance. What else? Garlic, okay, what else? Yes, definitely, right? So when you eat those kind of foods, they affect your mind, right? And they affect how you think, and they affect how you act, all right? So that's characteristics of food. And even in speech, there's characteristics of goodness, passion, and ignorance. So what kind of speech do you think would be in the mode of goodness? What kind of speech? Yes. Yes, like when you're talking. What would be a symptom of the mode of goodness when you're talking? What? I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Okay, that's a good point. Sometimes, you know, they say if you have nothing good to say, then just don't say anything. But if you have to say something, what would be a symptom of speech in the mode of goodness? Yes. What? Thank you is a great one. I love that. Yes, definitely, yes. And you're welcome. Okay, so that would be words that are pleasing, right? The words that are pleasing. Wow, and then that's a whole nother mode, isn't it? Because there's goodness, passion, ignorance, and then above the mode of goodness is called Vishuddhisattva, and that's the mode, that's the highest mode. That's spiritual goodness, transcendental goodness. So that's what we're aspiring for. So all of these modes, everything that we do affects how we think and affects how we act and affects how we could possibly go into our next life. Because in this life, because here you all are born into families where, you know, your parents are chanting and they're making prasadam, so that probably means, like, in your last life, that you did something very special to be born into a family of devotees. And even sometimes if you do a little bit, like there's in the verse in the Bhagavad Gita, it goes, Nahabhi Kramo Nasho Sti, Pratyavayo Navidyate, that even a little advancement on this path can save one from the most dangerous type of fear. And there is a story about an animal who remembers something from his past life, And he's saved. Does anybody know who that is? Yes. Yes. Good for you. Gajendra. So Gajendra, he's in a bad situation, right? He's in the water, and he's having a great time. He's, you know, putting water on him with his trunk. He's sucking it up, and he's spraying with his friends. But all of a sudden, what happens? All of a sudden, yes. An alligator, right? Yeah, an alligator grabbed his foot, and they fought for so many years, but ultimately, the alligator seemed to be winning. Why do you think that is? Why would the alligator be winning? Yes. Yes. That's right. He has an advantage because he's got more of a water body. So Gajendra started to flounder, you know, he didn't know what to do. He's losing. So what do you do when you think you're losing and you're going to die? What did he do? Yes, that's right. And not only that, he had something to offer. What did he offer? Yes. What? A lotus flower. He picked up a lotus flower with his trunk. He held it up and he's like, Krishna, help me. And he also chanted prayers that he learned in his past life. So you may think that we're in here and you're in Bhagavatam class, you may not always want to even go to Bhagavatam class or hear it, but actually hearing these stories and chanting these mantras can save your life. Sometimes you're driving down the road and all of a sudden there's a car that stops right in front of you, put your brake on, you go, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And that proves that this is working. And so the mode of goodness, which means that, you know, you're chanting mantras, you're eating food in the mode of goodness, that you're kind to people, that your speech is kind. So speech in the mode of goodness, it doesn't hurt anybody's feelings. Like you don't say, if you're in the mode of goodness with your speech, you wouldn't say, oh, you're so stupid, or you're a dumbbell, or, you know what I mean, you're too fat, or whatever. Those are not examples of speech in the mode of goodness. So we want to try to keep all of our activities in the mode of goodness, because otherwise there is a reaction. If we're very unkind with our speech in the future, you know, we may experience the same thing, because for every action there is a reaction. Once there was a big assembly of sages, and at the assembly they wanted to find out, because the three main personalities are Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and Vishnu, right. And so they wanted to find out, well, who is the highest? You know, who's the most transcendental of all these people? So they picked Bhrigu Muni to go and visit each of these personalities to see that who is the most transcendental. So Bhrigu Muni, first he goes to Lord Brahma. And Bhrigu Muni is actually a son of Lord Brahma. So he goes into Lord Brahma's assembly, and because he's the son, because Lord Brahma's his father and an important person, what should he do? What should he do in that case? Yes. He should bow down, right? And he should offer prayers. But he didn't do any of that. He just went in there because he was testing him. So what did Lord Brahma do? He got angry, right? Yeah, he got angry, he chastised, he was so, so angry, but explained, because Lord Brahma, he was able to control his anger. He was able to control it, but still, you know, he was upset about it, and it was obvious. So he went to visit Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva happened to be the brother of Bhrigu Muni. So he goes to see Lord Shiva, and as a brother he hadn't seen for a while, like if you hadn't seen your brother for a while, when you saw him, what might you do, Hari? Yeah, you might hug him. And that's exactly what Bhrigu Muni tried to do. He went up to Lord Shiva, and he went to give him a hug, and Bhrigu Muni said, oh, don't hug me, because you're always in ashes, you know, and you're kind of an unclean state, and you know, just, I don't want to hug you. So Lord Shiva was super offended, and he was ready to, like, get out his chakra and just, but Parvati, no, please don't do that. Please don't do that. So she begged him not to feel those feelings, not to be revengeful. So far he saw Lord Brahma, Lord Brahma got angry, and that was, you know, more of a mental reaction. And in this case, Lord Shiva, he got super angry. Then he goes to see Lord Vishnu. So Lord Vishnu, he's kind of lying down, you know, like Mahavishnu with Lakshmi Devi. And in comes Bhrigu Muni. And what does Bhrigu Muni do? Anybody know what he does? He kicks him. He goes up. Can you imagine? And he kicks Lord Vishnu right on the chest. Whoa. What does Lord Vishnu do? Nimai. Yeah, yeah, he does. What does he say when he apologizes? Anch. Yeah, yeah, he says, oh, I'm so sorry, like my chest is so hard, and your poor little foot here, let me massage your foot. So explain, when that happened, Bhrigu Muni, tears started to come from his eyes. You know, he was so overcome with emotion that he could be so kind. So when he went back to the assembly, he explained, well, out of these three people, these three personalities, Lord Vishnu is definitely supreme, because he's so situated not only in goodness, but in Vishuddhisattva, in the spiritual mode of goodness. So, you know, these are some characteristics of these modes of material nature that we're trying to establish. You know, we're trying to make sure that our speech, that our charity, like, Sometimes people give money for a cause that maybe helps the war to go on. Does that sound like a very good cause? Not really, you know, where people are getting killed. So that would be charity in the mode of ignorance. Somebody else might give charity thinking, you know, even as a devotee, well, I'm going to give like $500 to this because I know I'll get something from it, you know. So that's good. But again, it's kind of filled with fruit of activity and what I can get. But then higher than that, the mode of goodness or the mode of Vishuddhisattva is, I'm just going to give this because I love, of my love. You know, I want to give this to Krishna, or I want to give this to the temple of for Lord Nisringadev. So all of these examples are there for us to remember how we should use our lives, the best way to use our lives. So, you know, out of these three modes, there's different personalities that are exemplify some of these modes of material nature. So we have Vishnu. Anyone think of some other devotee, maybe from the Bhagavatam or someone that you may have heard of, that you think, oh, that person's in the mode of goodness? Anybody you can think of? Okay, I was thinking of Sudama. Yes. Did you say Lord Chaitanya? Oh, yeah, I mean, even beyond, right? He's Vishuddhisattva. Because Lord Chaitanya, you know, he's giving something that no one else has ever given. He's giving up pure love of God. Yes, Anch. Prahlad Maharaj, totally in the mode of goodness, because, you know, in the mode of passion, people, they work so hard. One of the characteristics of the mode of passion is they work very hard and they're hankering because they want something. They want more. But in the mode of goodness, you're just kind of happy being in that mode of goodness. Yes. Sudama Brahmana. Is that what you mean? Good one. That's what I was thinking of too. Yes. Who? Oh, perfect. Yes, those are great examples, you guys. Yeah, because Sudama Brahmana, if you remember the story, he was very, very, very poor. And his wife was also, of course, also poor, emaciated, which means very, very thin. So the wife, she didn't care about herself so much, but she didn't like the fact that her husband was so skinny. So she said, please go visit your friend Krishna. He was a friend from childhood. And bring him this gift. What was the gift that Sudama brought? Hari. Right, some grains of chipped rice, which is a very cheap kind of chipped rice. Sudama didn't really want to go, but he thought, okay, this will be a great chance for me to see my friend Lord Krishna. So he goes there, and he gets in the gates finally, and he sees Lord Krishna. And Lord Krishna is so happy to see Sudama Brahmana. What does he do? He's so happy to see his friend. What does he do? Yes, Nima. How what? He announces him, and he, yes. Yeah, right. He bathes his feet. He massages his feet. He does a whole artik ceremony to him. So, and then he doesn't want to give Krishna the chipped rice, but what does Krishna do? He grabs it, right? Anyway, he grabs it, and he eats it, and he's just relishing it. Wow, this is so great. Why do you think he thought that chipped rice was so great? Why do you think? Yes. Good. That's such a good point. Krishna doesn't really eat the food. It's the love and devotion that it's offered with. So when Krishna went to take another bite, Rukmini stopped him. She said, no, stop. Because that's enough, what you've just eaten. It's enough to satisfy the whole creation. You don't need to eat anymore. So, and also the example of Prabhupada being in the mode of goodness. Of course, Prabhupada, he came over to the United States on the order of his spiritual master. Bhakti Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, if you ever have money, you print books and you come to the West. Did Prabhupada know what was going to happen? No, he had no idea. But he thought even if one person became a devotee, his mission would be successful. And so often he would go down to the shipyard to see if there was a ship that was going back to India, but he never went back. And he became so successful. But did he become puffed up? I'm so great, look what I've done. Did that happen to Prabhupada? No, it didn't happen to him. But that could happen to us, right? Let's say we become, we have a company, we become important, we're making a lot of money, we're driving around a fancy car, that we might think, wow, you know, I'm an important person, I'm really great. People should understand that, they should give me respect. And that also is an example of the mode of passion. And we see even personalities like Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, they're kind of a mixture of passion and ignorance. But even though Hiranyakashipu, he knew the scriptures. He knew he could start speaking. He could start speaking a lot of the scriptures. But he had such a strong desire to be famous. And not just famous, but to be the ruler of the world, right? To be the ruler of the world. Yes. He wanted to be God. He wanted to be immortal, didn't he? Which wasn't available to him. And I was thinking of another person that's kind of famous, like your, who was your age, in the mode of passion. And this personality, they really wanted something really bad. And so they performed an austerity for what they wanted. Generally, sacrifice and austerity should be done as an offering to Krishna. But sometimes it's done for something that we really want. Can anyone think of who that might be? Like a person, Anj? Ekalavya, that's a good example. Actually, that's a really good example. It wasn't the one I was thinking of, but that's also good. Yeah, I was thinking of Dhruva and how Dhruva, you know, he was so upset about not being allowed to sit on his father's lap that he went and performed austerities so that he could ultimately get his own planet. But what happened when he finally saw Krishna? This is what he wanted. He wanted his own planet. He wanted to rule. He wanted to get even. So that's a characteristic of the mode of passion. Some, you know, wanting to be famous and getting revenge if you feel you've been wronged. Like Kshatriyas are in that mode of goodness. So what happened when Dhruva finally saw Krishna? What happened? When he finally saw Krishna, yes. He didn't care about it anymore, did he? Do you remember what he said? No? Anybody remember what he said? He said, I wanted, you know, this whole kingdom, but now it seems like I have a diamond and I wanted a piece of glass, you know? So sometimes in this world we have so many things that we want. What is the popular, like, video game? Is it an Xbox? Is that what it is now, or...? It's Roblox, okay. So you want a Roblox, and you want the best Roblox game, and you want to get a great score, and when you get the highest score, you're like, whoa, you know, I'm there, but does that last very long, that feeling? No, it doesn't last very long. So that's the thing, you know, you want this, and you want that, you finally get it, but then does it satisfy the soul? Does it satisfy the soul when you get a high score? Okay, good. I'm glad you said no. Yeah, it doesn't satisfy the soul. So we want to do things that satisfy our soul and help us along on our eternal path, right? On our eternal path. So what about the mode of ignorance? Can anyone give me examples of the mode of ignorance? And then we'll talk about girls. Anybody there want to give me an example of the mode of ignorance? Come on, girls, I know you know it. There's so many demons. What's an example of one of the demons in the mode of ignorance? Just yell it out. You don't even have to call on you. Okay, anybody? Yes. Ignorance, yeah. Sometimes it can be a mixture of passion and ignorance. Okay, cursing at someone. And so who's, yes. What? Yeah. That is a good example, right? Ashvatthama. When they do things like, it says in the Bhagavad Gita that they do things that are harmful for the world. Obviously, that was such a harmful thing to do. Yes. Duryodhana, another great example, yeah. There's a verse, it's Kama Esha Krodha Esha Rajaguna Samudbhavan Mahashano Mahapatma Vidyanam Ihavaryanam, that it is lust only, you know, born from the material modes of passion and ignorance, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. So sometimes, because we're not hooked up with the mode of goodness, we can be forced to do something by the most material nature that we may be very sorry for later on. You may be forced by the mode of passion or forced by the mode of ignorance to do something. So it's important that we get our dose of the mode of goodness regularly. And of course, what's something that can really keep us not only in goodness, but in Vishuddhisattva, in the spiritual mode of goodness? What is something that we can do always to keep us there?
Yes.
That's right, chanting japa. That's really something. That's why we do it every day, because it protects us against doing something or even think, because it's like thinking, feeling, and willing. Like you think of, just like criminals, you know, they have an idea. They think of something they're going to do, and then, you know, they make their plan, and then finally they do it. And then what happens? They end up behind bars, exactly. And it's amazing that even those people can be redeemed. You know, Mother Bhakti Lata, she's in charge of the prison ministry. And so she sends books to the prisons. And one of the prisons, I read a letter that he wrote. And the letter that he wrote was, he's in prison for his entire lifetime. He'll never get out. So you can imagine, he did something so bad. I don't know what it was, but something so bad. They'll be in prison for his whole life. And so he did something so bad even that he was in solitary confinement, which means you're in a little cell, you can't talk to anybody, they bring you your meals, but you have no association with anyone, pretty painful. So he got a book, he got one of Prabhupada's books, and he said it was great to be in solitary confinement because the whole time he just chanted Hare Krishna. And when he got out of solitary confinement, some of the other prisoners, they offered him, like, here's some drugs for you. Some or other, even in prison, they can get stuff like that. And you know what he said? I don't want it. I'm not interested in that anymore. You know? And they were like, what? He said, you could have it, you could just sell it, and then you could have the money. Because he was kind of a famous criminal, right? So they wanted to, you know, if somebody's famous criminal, then they wanna give him something so he'll like him. He goes, no, I don't want anything. So they tempted him in so many ways, you know, to like give up his spirituality. But he wouldn't do that. So he actually said, I feel like my whole life was meant for this, what's happening to me now. Getting this book and becoming a devotee. My friends have given up on me, my family has given up on me, but I have this, I have Krishna, and I have Krishna's devotees. So we have to appreciate what we have, and we have to appreciate how we can cultivate this mode of goodness and this mode of transcendental goodness. There's another story of a devotee. Well, he wasn't a devotee. He was actually quite in the mode of ignorance. You might remember who he is. He was a hunter. Anybody remember what his name is? Yeah, all right. I heard it from the girls. Mrigrari the hunter. What did Mrigrari do? What did he like to do? Yes. Right. He wouldn't kill them all the way, but he'd shoot them so they'd be left suffering. And Narada Muni was traveling through the forest, and he's like, wow, what is going on? So he found the hunter, and he's like, what are you doing? He's, well, I'm just doing what my father taught me and my grandfather taught him. He said, yeah, but you know what's going to happen? The way that these animals are suffering, you are going to have to suffer the same way. So Narada Muni gave him an instruction. What was that instruction that he gave him? What was the instruction he gave him? Anj. Okay, and he told him something else too, something else he should do. Anyone remember? He told him to circumambulate the Tulsi tree. So You know, we do that every day in the morning. Prabhupada tried to set things up because we came so much from the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion that we need regularly to do something like that, circulate Tulsi, because she's the bestower of all good things and relieves us from any offenses that we might make. So that's another characteristic of the mode of goodness, is you're forgiving. Sometimes someone does something or says something to you, and you're so angry, you think, I'm never going to talk to them again, or I'm never going to forgive them. But that's something that we want. Forgiving them doesn't mean they have to be our best friend, but we might want to just let it go a bit. So Megrahi was a good example of someone who was taken from the mode of ignorance, and he was elevated to the mode of spiritual goodness. So I know it's time for you to go. Thank you for coming. And Hare Krishna. Oh, thank you so much for being such a good participant. Okay, this unusual verse, when I looked it up, and I looked up some of the things that Prabhupada had to say about it, I didn't feel that I could share that with the entire group that we had here today. I thought that they might get scared. So I decided I would save that for right now. So I found a couple of things. One thing I found that once that Prabhupada was giving some darshan, and Shruti Kirti was there, and this man came in, and he sat down. He was a man, he had glasses on, and he had his head down. And Prabhupada motioned to, I think it was Amoga, that he could ask any questions. So Amoga said, yes, you can ask questions to Prabhupada. But the man didn't say anything, and he didn't even lift up his head. So Prabhupada just started chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Then Prabhupada started talking about ghosts and saying how, ghosts, that they take over a person's consciousness. And Shruti Kirti said, but Prabhupada, why are you talking about ghosts? And he kind of laughed, Prabhupada just kept on chanting. So he indicated that this man, had been taken over by, he was ghostly haunted. He was not able to communicate with anyone. And there was another story, Prabhupada, he was in India, and there was a big mansion, beautiful house, but no one would rent it because it had a reputation for being ghostly haunted. So Prabhupada said he rented it for like 200 rupees, which was like nothing back then. Even now it's like nothing. So he rented it, and Prabhupada said that the ghost frequented so many places in that house. But Prabhupada just kept chanting. He said, especially at the gate, and ultimately the ghost went away. And there was one more story. Probably you're familiar with the story. This was with John Lennon, in England, when they had one of the houses was also ghostly haunted. And someone told Prabhupada, to just go there, blow the conch shell, and just keep on chanting, and they'll go away. So the Hare Krishna mantra is so auspicious that by chanting Hare Krishna, you're able to make everything inauspicious go away. It automatically brings auspiciousness. It's the highest austerity. It's the most elevated devotional service. So chanting is amazing. Once I got a book. Someone gave it to me for my birthday years ago, and it was called Return from Tomorrow. And I didn't know why they gave me this book. It was kind of an unusual book, but it was about a young man. This is World War II, and during this time, a lot of this man and his friends, they were all joining the army. So he also joined the army. He had been going to medical school. But he dropped out and joined the army, and he was like digging ditches, in the winter. It was very cold, and he kept getting very sick. But one of the admirals, he took note that this man had gone to medical school, so he called him in and said, you know, we want to pay for you to finish medical school, and that way you can help out with, you know, with the other soldiers. So he was, like, so happy about that, really happy about it. So, but he got sick again, really sick, so he's in the infirmary, and the nurse keeps coming in and checking on him, and she comes in and she takes his temperature and she said, oh my God, you're not going anywhere. Your temperature is 107. And he thought, I am going somewhere. I'm going to medical school. So when she left, he got up and he walked out. And in the book, it explained that he walked right through a medical cart that was coming. He wasn't able to avoid it and he went right through it. He was like, what's going on? So then he realized that he left his body. He was now in his subtle body. And he went back to find his body, which was difficult because they were all young men, but he finally found it, and it was his by the ring that he had on his finger. So he was there. He didn't know what to do. And in the book, it explains that Jesus, a spiritual personality, came and took him kind of on a little journey, kind of unusual. But one of the things they did was they went down to a very popular, like, nightclub kind of a place. And in this place, he was able to see people in physical bodies and people in subtle bodies. And the subtle bodies explained that even though they couldn't drink, they would be trying to drink, you know? So many things. Even though they're fighting, they weren't really able to hurt each other, still, they were simulating the fighting. So, and he also saw one of the people that was in a physical body drinking. He fell over, and his body opened. His subtle body he opened up, and he saw one of the subtle bodies go inside. So, explains that sometimes when people are haunted, you know, they will do things they wouldn't ordinarily do, and when it's all over, they don't even know why they did it. So that's why intoxication is really something you want to stay away from, because sometimes it can lead to you doing things that you wouldn't normally do, caused by other living entities. So this man, ultimately, he started to pursue his medical career, but after a while, he thought, because of this experience that he had, he thought he could better use it for helping people even psychologically. So he wanted to become a psychologist. So they brought him in front of a board of people who were going to decide whether it could be or not. And they asked him about this experience that he had. So was this a real experience, you know, that you had? He said, yes, it was. And they said, okay, because if you would have denied it, we weren't going to accept your, you know, as a psychology, give you a psychology degree since you're admitting it. So there's so much going on in this world, you know, in us and around us. So it's so important to protect ourselves, like with spiritual armor, with the armor of chanting Hare Krishna and devotional service, you know. Daivyesha gunamaya mamaya dratyaya mamaya matrantite mayam etam trantite. That this divine energy of mine is very difficult to overcome, but those who surrender unto me can easily cross beyond it. So that's what I wanted to say about the verse. And if anybody has anything they want to add or just make a comment, this is a good time. Yes, Guru Prasad. Does anybody? Oh.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you for your nice class. You know, it'd be so easy if we were just in the mode of ignorance or passion or goodness, but the modes are mixed so much, you know, so sometimes you think, you know, you're doing okay, and then another mode come, and the mixture, so sometimes it's so just so hard to figure anything out. That's why you could say you have to protect yourself just by being transcendental and chant Hare Krishna.
Yeah, and the sadhana, like that's another symptom of the mode of goodness, is that regulation. You know, you do this at this time, this at that time, you know, and that you don't sleep too much, you don't sleep too little, you don't eat too much, you don't eat too little. So all of those things help us to remain, you know, more fixed in devotional service. So
even then, notice as I get older, you know, some of my habits change. You know, you don't sleep so much, you don't want to eat so much at a certain time because you're getting used to different, you know, being middle-aged and old-aged, and then, you know, it's just got to be Krishna conscious.
Yeah, it's challenging, but we're so lucky to have that rope to hang on to, right? That's how I feel also. There's another beautiful verse, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatman Associati Nakanchati Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Madhbhaktin Labhate Param, that one who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He's equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service to me. So these are the states that we're aspiring for, you know, to be able to cultivate that mode of goodness and that divine love, that divine nature. Like there's a whole chapter in Bhagavad Gita about the divine nature and the demonic nature. So sometimes, like you said, we can feel the demonic nature coming out, you know, some kind of anger, you know, some kind of lust, you know, some kind of greed. And we try to, just like Lord Brahma, he was able to give up his subtle body. You know, sometimes we're able to let that go. You know, we can see it for what it is, and we can just let it go and travel along, you know. Travel along on the sound vibration of the Hare Krishna mantra, you know, which can get us through anything, really. Get us through anything.
When Lord Brahma gave up these bodies, it was just like he gave up that train of thought.
His subtle body. Yeah, subtle body. Mm-hmm.
So that way he was able. So it wasn't a physical body, but the demons saw it as a, you know, like when it's leaving. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So they were able to see the subtle body.
Right.
In the form of a beautiful woman.
Yeah, I guess, again, the power of illusion, because really, everything is so much illusion, right? That, like, I listened to one lecture by Prema Vilas, and he took the three words, like, have, do, and be, and he applied it to each mode of material nature. It's kind of interesting, like the mode of ignorance, you know, you're always wanting something, because you can't be happy, because you want money, so you can have a car, build a house, and then you'll be happy. But the fact is, no matter what you get, it's hard to be happy in that mode. And a mode of passion also, but mode of passion is more like do, have, and be. Like, I'll do this, you know, I'll make money, and then this will happen, and then I'll be happy. But the fact is, I mean, I remember Pushkar telling me a story about a man, I think he had like $6 billion, and he, $8 billion, and he lost. Yeah, so he thought he lost half of it, so he committed suicide, and it turned, what? By jumping in front of a train, and it turned out that he didn't even lose it. You know, but even, he only lost $2 billion, but he still had like $6 billion left. So, I mean, that's the mode of passion, you know, that never being satisfied. And then the mode of goodness is like be, and then do, and then have. Like, you're no matter what, just like Sudama Brahmana, he's happy in any situation. Like, the devotee is happy with whatever Krishna gives him. He feels peaceful, and he feels happy. He accepts the situation, not that, well, how come this person has this and I don't have it? That's not fair. I want that too. No, he accepts it. Like, you know, just like Prabhupada, when he came over with $7 that he had and a trunk of books and, you know, went through difficulties, you know, lost his first Bhagavad Gita, and he was staying in a place where one of the tenants was on LSD. And Prabhupada was actually afraid for his life. You know, he had to call Mukunda, find another place to stay. But Prabhupada never gave up on his goal, you know. And he still felt peaceful from within. So there's so many good examples of devotees, you know. I was so happy to see the kids, you know, that were able to give examples of these personalities in the different modes. It's really... really nice. Anybody else want to say something? Okay, thank you so much. Hare Krishna. No, I know. That's the thing. I can't, because you want, I was going to.